Hello and welcome to the Illinois Audio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this half hour I'll be bringing you articles from the Decatur Herald and Review. Up in the air. Our first article, Decatur was once home to the world's largest kite manufacturer. A generation ago, the spring winds could be thanked for driving part of the Decatur economy. The High Flyer Manufacturing Company was billed as the world's largest kite maker. Headquartered north of downtown, it hired dozens of workers at the height of its business, producing model airplane kits, bird feeders, and hockey sticks. But it was the signature kite that put the factory on the map, with patriotic themes and names like the American Beauty, the Stratoflyer, and High Flyer Little Boy, with the slogan Playmates of the Clouds. In the 1950s, many sold for 10 cents, with a promise to fly higher than any other kite. Today, some of the vintage ones are for sale on eBay. Harvey Sellers, a paper salesman, began tinkering with kite designs in his basement. Sellers had noted the poor construction of other kites on the market and decided that he could improve on them. According to a 1969 story in the Decatur Daily Review, he eventually started using a wire loop to hold two sticks together, a decision credited with making the product strong but light. The High Flyer Kite Company is officially founded and within a week moves into Sellers' garage to handle orders. The bow kite and barn door kite were early models. In 1923, the company relocates to a plant at 165 East Marietta Street, where 34 employees produce 10,000 kites a day. The whole world seems to be demanding kits, and they keep asking for high flyers from Decatur, Sellers says a year later. In 1928, production reaches 20,000 kites a day as the company moves to 510 East Wabash Avenue. And in 1927, the company buys the Brist Manufacturing Company of Topeka, Kansas, a maker of dolls, games, and toys. The company's glider airplane has become a big seller, but was discontinued because the government put a freeze on balsa wood imports from Ecuador, which were used for life rafts during World War II. And in 1953, the assembly line employs 85 people and makes 6 models, including a plastic variety. In other news, Pritzker extends the emergency housing relief application period. Illinoisans suffering economic decline due to COVID now have an extra week to apply for emergency rental assistance. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Tuesday that the Illinois Housing Development Authority, or IHDA, extended the deadline for Illinois renters to apply for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program until noon Friday, August 28th. According to a news release from the IHDA, the deadline was extended due to powerful storms that battered residents in northern Illinois last week. With over 750,000 Illinoisans losing power as a result of the strong derecho that swept across northern Illinois a week ago, it's important we provide additional time to file and complete applications for assistance, IHDA Executive Director Kristen Faust said in a news release. I am pleased to extend the deadline as there were many renters and landlords without power for nearly a week, which negatively impacted their ability to apply to the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. For an application to be considered complete, landlords must also submit documents on behalf of the renter, which are due August 30th. Tenants who are approved for emergency rental assistance will receive a one-time grant of $5,000 paid directly to their landlords. That grant covers rent payments missed beginning in March and repayment of rent bills through December or until the $5,000 is exhausted, whichever comes first. The grant will not have to be repaid. A similar initiative called the Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program is set to launch on August 24th and will not be affected by the extension of rental assistance, according to IHDA's Tuesday release. Applications for both rental and mortgage assistance can be filed online at era.ihda.org. Each program is receiving $150 million in federal CARES Act funding. IHDA expects about 30,000 tenants to receive funding. When announcing the programs earlier this month, Pritzker acknowledged it would not be enough to reach everyone impacted by the coronavirus pandemic, and that he would work on securing more federal assistance for Illinoisans. A Coles County wind farm developer announces a McLean County project. The same company that's planning a Coles County wind farm on Tuesday announced plans for a similar project in southern McLean County. Apex Clean Energy of Virginia said the project called Diamond Grove Wind is in the early stages of development. Public engagement manager Max Jabrixio said that the project would take up about 30,000 acres of farmland between Leroy and Hayworth. He said the company is talking with roughly 100 homeowners in the area. There is so much active wind in the county already, and our conversation with the homeowners has been overwhelmingly positive because they already know how useful wind energy has been there, said Jabrixio. Apex earlier this month announced plans for 70 wind turbines operating on about 20,000 acres of farmland in northern Coles County. The company said the Diamond Grove project would create hundreds of jobs during construction, with a local operations and maintenance team staying long-term to provide everyday oversight. We've begun early conversations with landowners and farmers regarding their interest in the project and have received a very positive response, Senior Development Manager Alan Moore said in a statement. Many residents are already familiar with the big benefits of wind energy, given McLean's role as a leader in bringing projects like this to the region. The company also has the Goose Creek Wind Project in Piatt County, Lincoln Land Wind Project in Sangamon and Morgan Counties, and Sugar Creek Wind Project and Mulligan Solar Project in Logan County. Shelby County adds 4 new COVID cases on Tuesday. Shelby County Health Department officials on Tuesday said 4 additional people have tested positive for COVID-19. They are a 25-year-old male with mild symptoms, a 23-year-old male with moderate symptoms and an ER visit, a 57-year-old female who has been hospitalized, and a 14-year-old male with mild symptoms. The positivity rate for the county is at 5.4% for the week ending August 8th. The rate was less than 0.1% for the week ending July 4th. Shelby County has a warning level for weekly positives per 100,000 population exceeding 50 per 100,000 to 87 per 100,000. The county now has 112 residents that have tested positive for COVID-19, the department said in a statement. Governor J.B. Pritzker has said he may place additional restrictions on counties with high COVID cases. Last week, rules limiting meetings and social events to the lesser of 25 people or 25% of overall room capacity and closing bars and casinos at 11 p.m. started statewide. Looking over to court news, a jury finds a Decatur resident guilty in a murder of a Bloomington man. Taiwan Bruce was found guilty Tuesday of first-degree murder in the December 2018 death of a Bloomington man. A McLean County jury reached the verdict after roughly 5 hours of deliberations that started late Monday afternoon. Bruce, 21, of Decatur, was charged in the death of 20-year-old Egerton Dover, who was shot and killed December 5th, 2018, in his West Bloomington home. He was found guilty of murder involving home invasion and involving robbery, as well as guilty on separate charges of home invasion and robbery. The charges were made under legal accountability laws that allow a person to be charged if the death occurred during the commission of a forcible felony. Bruce's bond was revoked and he was returned to the McLean County Jail until a sentencing hearing at 1:30 p.m. October the 8th. Because the jury also believed Bruce was armed when these offenses occurred, a 15-year firearm enhancement will be applied to his sentence in October. After the verdict was returned, Assistant State's Attorneys Tamara Wagoner and Mary Lawson said they were pleased with the outcome of the trial and happy for Dover's family. "I feel like justice was served," Lawson said. Wagoner added, "Even though the case may have seemed complicated for us, it was clear, but that's because we had the benefit of the Bloomington Police Department, who did a phenomenal job." Investigators could not determine if Bruce or another suspect, Curtis Hairston, pulled the trigger, but it doesn't matter which one of the two, whether it would be the defendant or Curtis Hairston, which one of them pulled the trigger because they were both part of entering the house to commit the robbery, Wagoner said in her closing arguments Monday to end the trial that lasted just over a week. Bruce was one of three Decatur men police identified as suspects in Dover's death. Anthony Gramsus was found guilty of first-degree murder and home invasion when a McLean County jury returned a verdict July 23rd. Prosecutors argued Gramsus drove the car that took Bruce and Hairston, 18, to Dover's home the morning he was shot. Hairston, who police said was believed to be involved, died during a 2019 shooting at a Decatur restaurant. Wagoner argued Bruce was legally responsible for Dover's death, even if he didn't pull the trigger, because he played a central role in planning to rob the victim. In her opening statements, Bruce's attorney, Mackenzie Frizzle, said he was innocent both factually and under the law. Mark Messman, the defendant's other attorney, argued in his closing that the prosecutors had no evidence linking Bruce to Dover's death. He said other people could be responsible, including the victim's friend who called 911 and a person who was seen with the gun believed to be the murder weapon. A Millikan student was among those killed in a weekend collision with an ambulance. A Millikan University student is among three people killed Saturday when an ambulance collided with another vehicle on a Woodford County road, authorities say. Morgan Ryder, 20, of Gridley, was a nursing student at the university, according to the Peoria Journal-Star. The vehicle driven by Ryder was southbound on County Road 2400 East, approaching Illinois 116 when it turned into the pathway of the ambulance traveling west on 116, authorities said. Also killed in the crash Saturday was Jared Segerman, 19, of Minonk, and Seth Yunra, 19, of Pattonsburg, according to Illinois State Police. Another passenger in the car, a 21-year-old Minonk man, was taken to an area hospital with serious injuries. The ambulance driver, 42-year-old man from LaSalle, was also hospitalized, along with a patient being transported, a 78-year-old woman from Ottawa, a 25-year-old Earlville woman also in the ambulance, was uninjured. And now, the obituaries for today. Linda Lowe, Linda L. Lowe, 83, of Decatur, died on the morning of August 17th, 2020. Visitation will be from 12 p.m. until the service time at 1 p.m. Friday, August 21st, 2020, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Burial will follow in Point Pleasant Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the American Heart Association. Carolyn Louise Reynolds. Carolyn Louise Potts Reynolds was died on August 17th, 2020. Family and friends will celebrate her life on Saturday, August 22nd, 2020 at 10:30 a.m. A private family visitation will be held at Dawson and Wickoff Westwood Street Funeral Home. A live stream of the funeral will be available at spldecatoronline.church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Paul's Lutheran Church at 1 Bachrock Court in Decatur, Illinois, 62526, or the Lutheran School Association, located at 2001 East Mound Road in Decatur, Illinois. Clinton Joe Keller. Clinton Joe Keller, 79, of Decatur, passed away Thursday evening, August 13th, 2020, in his residence. Memorial services will be conducted at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd, 2020, at the Marantha Assembly of God, located at 555 West Imboden Drive in Decatur, Illinois, 62521, with a visitation also at the church beginning at 5 o'clock p.m. on Friday, August 21st, 2020. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. Memorials may be made to Shriners Hospitals for Children in St. Louis, Missouri. Mark Anthony Richard. Mark Anthony Richard, 55, of Decatur, passed away on August 16th, 2020, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Visitation will be on Thursday, August 20th, 2020, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. A private family memorial service will be held on Friday, August 21st, 2020. It will be streamed live at funeralview.com/login/event. The number is 35221. CDC guidelines will be followed. Masks are required. Temperatures and screening will be conducted at the door. Warren Shipley. Warren L. Shipley, 79, of Boody, Illinois, died at his home on August 16th, 2020. Family and friends are invited to the Civic Center in Blue Mound, Illinois, at 551 North Lewis Street in Blue Mound, Illinois, 62513, for a family-led celebration of life on Saturday, August 22nd, 2020, at 11 a.m. Visitation will take place 1 hour prior to the service, from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Arthur A. Art Adler. Arthur A. Art Adler II, 70 years old, of Decatur, passed away on August 15, 2020 at Villa Clara in Decatur. Services to celebrate Art's life will be at 1 o'clock p.m. on Friday, August 21st, 2020, at Star of Hope Mausoleum Chapel, Graceland Cemetery in Decatur. Visitation for Art will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, August 20th, 2020, At Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, Art will be entombed in the Star of Hope Mausoleum in Graceland Cemetery in Decatur. CDC guidelines will be followed, with those in attendance to wear face masks. Adelia M. Workman, Adelius M. Workman, 66, of Decatur, passed away on August the 10th, 2020 at HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield, Illinois. Adelia's memorial service to celebrate her life will be held on Saturday, August 22nd, 2020 at 11:30 a.m. at Baron and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 2801 North Monroe Street in Decatur, Illinois, with Father Michael Trummer officiating. Visitation will be held from 10:30 to 11:30 at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Memorials may be made to Gift of Hope. CDC guidelines will be followed, and those in attendance will be required to wear face masks. To view the live stream of the service, please copy and paste the following link into your web browser. webcast.funeralview.com/events/viewer35049. Betty Jean Shaw. Betty Jean Shaw, 90, of Decatur, passed away August 15th, 2020 at Heritage Health in Mount Zion. A graveside service will be at 11 a.m. Monday, August 24th, 2020 at St. John's Lutheran Cemetery in Decatur, Illinois. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur is assisting the family. Condolences and memories may be shared with the family in care of Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes at brentlingerandearl.com. And those are the obituaries for today. What others are saying. This is a part of our opinion pieces. What others are saying. Census 2020 needs no more obstacles. Around the country, canvassers are going door to door to reach residents who have yet to fill out the census, a form of outreach that only started up again last month following delays caused by the coronavirus pandemic. However, efforts will be short-lived. The Census Bureau has decided to end all counting efforts, including those by phone, online, or mail, on September 30th, 1 month earlier than had been previously announced. And that's a problem. The months leading up to the census period brought endless roadblocks. That's why it's so critical now that the government ensures that the response rate is as high as possible. It's vital that the Census Bureau count the population accurately because it impacts so many aspects of life, including political representation and how federal funding is split among communities. The Census Bureau, along with the rest of the country, has frantically navigated the changing landscape following the arrival of the coronavirus that initially pushed the typical census deadline from the end of July to the end of October to account for lost time. Since the Bureau announced the deadline change to September, officials have said they would hire more census takers to support the accelerated efforts. But there is no guarantee that move will fully make up for the upcoming loss. In a statement on August the 3rd, the Census Bureau said the new deadline of September 30th was set to ensure that the Bureau meets the December 31st deadline to send state population counts to the President. The Bureau has attempted to push back the December deadline by 4 months to no avail. Democrats have introduced legislation to extend the deadline, but don't have bipartisan support. However, it is necessary that the Census Bureau continue to push for a deadline extension, given the unprecedented setbacks caused by the pandemic. As the deadline ticks closer, we ask all Americans to remember that the well-being of their schools, transportation, community development, and so much more is at risk. Be there for your community, be proactive, fill out the census, and help ensure your neighbors do the same. And in our last piece, remembering the price for victory in Japan is critical. Anyone who does any studying of the method of warfare during World War II has to, at some point, work past their abject horror at the details. We found the most base of actions, ones that make us wonder if we've already far surpassed the limits that qualify us to be human. Perhaps that explains the generally muted response to VJ Day, which marks the capitulation of Japan to conclude World War II. As we mark the 75th anniversary of VJ Day, it's worth remembering that the world was a radically different place 75 years ago. Most significantly, the United States and its allies were bringing to a conclusion a worldwide battle that resulted in the deaths of 3% of the world's population. Battle action in each theater had its horrors. British military and citizens alike faced relentless aerial attacks. Stalingrad produced endless stories of attack, crushing civilian deaths, starvation, and hand-to-hand combat. D-Day bloodied the beaches of France in their march toward Germany. Allied forces came across concentration camps devoted to eliminating Jews, gypsies, and homosexuals. In the Pacific theater, Allied forces came across a cruel foe that had no hesitation about torturing or killing civilians and military alike. The Japanese built large and dangerous defenses and used the miserably humid climate to their advantage. In the air, as Allies flew from Pacific Island to Pacific Island, pilots and sailors could find themselves at the mercy of the ocean and its predators. World War II claimed 419,400 American lives. Another 670,000 were wounded. In the Pacific, 111,606 Americans died, 253,142 were wounded. For Japan, 1.7 million died. VJ Day stands as a tribute to championed ideals. As Douglas MacArthur accepted the Japanese surrender and was put in charge of the island for its reassimilation to the world, he spoke of freedom, tolerance, and justice as he led a rebuilt country and rejoining the world order. That's the importance of marking the day and remembering the sacrifices made. Even as the number of people who remember the events of the war dwindle, their memory and integrity must be honored. Those who won the battles remind us of the best that we were and may inspire us again to being the best that we can be. And with that, I thank you very much again for joining me here on the Illinois Audio Reader. Be sure to stay tuned to all of our interesting and, I think, thought-provoking programming here. My name is Cedric Richardson, and I look forward to joining you again next time. Goodbye.